Now we turn to section 523A8, and I highlight one point under section 8 that imposes the quote unquote undue hardship test on the debtor. And the test that we've all come to know and love is the Bruner test. The Bruner test has been adopted by all circuits except the First and the Eighth. Other circuits apply a totality of the circumstances test. Just due to the time limits, we're going to focus on what the Fifth Circuit has done. So we're going to take a look at the Bruner test. There, the debtor must establish by a preponderance.
Judge Lopez, let me just interrupt you. You do have a comment from Judge Dodd, and it reads, the plural of anecdote is not evidence.
It is if you're a debtor's attorney.
The debtor must establish a preponderance of the evidence that the debtor cannot, based on current income and expenses, maintain a minimal standard of living for herself and her dependents if forced to repay the loans. Two, additional circumstances exist indicating that this state of affairs is likely to persist for a significant portion of the repayment period, and a debtor has made good faith efforts to repay the loans. I want to just kind of highlight something before we actually kind of start going through the standards. I think Bruner had some really, I guess what debtors lawyers would call bad facts that led to this test. I would note that in the Bruner decision, the Second Circuit noted that Bruner had filed for a discharge within a month of the first date that the payment was due. And she did so without requesting a deferment payment. So the court found that it wasn't even good faith in an effort to repay the loan because she filed so quickly after the first payments were due. And obviously, I think based upon what y'all normally see, you're not seeing someone who has just graduated and a few months later filing for Chapter 7 and then seeking a discharge right after that. You're seeing folks who are really struggling. So, but I just wanted to highlight that those were the facts there. And I'll turn it over to Julianne.
And Ms. Bruner was also pro se. And her total student loan debt for both undergraduate and her master's was $9,000. So there's a huge difference today than in the cost of education than there was back in the day of Bruner. Yeah. Okay, so now let's get on to the three prongs of Bruner. Let's deal with the first prong. The first prong requires that the debtor show that he or she cannot maintain, based on their current income and expenses, a minimal standard of living for himself or his or her dependents if forced to repay the loan. Obviously, what the court's going to look at here is the budget. What's the disparity between income and, quote, reasonable and necessary expenses? The courts have stated that what the court relies on in making this determination is common sense, knowledge gained from ordinary observations in daily life, and general experience. So in the Don O'Donohoe case, Southern District said that repayment of student loans may require financial sacrifices, but it should not force a debtor into abject poverty. Things that the court looks at, what's the debtor's standard of living? There are certain things that are required, and the Ivory Court specifically sets forth, people need shelter, they need basic utilities, they need food, they need to get haircuts, they need cars. For the most part, it is pretty much common sense what is reasonably necessary, although there are some instances where courts obtain different results regarding whether an expense is reasonable and necessary. Two examples of that would be church tithing and retirement contributions. Both, there are cases going both ways on that. And also, for married or cohabiting couples, remember, that includes cohabiting couples, not married. Most courts are going to consider the spouse's or partner's income in addition to that of the debtor, even if the spouse or partner is not a co-debtor in the bankruptcy, and even if they're not a co-debtor on the student loans. And then the second prong is the one that sinks most people. It's the one that makes most non-dischargeability complaints an effort in futility, in my opinion. And that is future inability to pay. So let's assume that the debtor's budget reasonable and necessary, and it's negative. We then move to the second prong. And that is the debtor has to show that this state of affairs is likely to persist for a significant portion of the payment period of the student loans. Remember that language for the repayment period of the student loans later on when we talk about the Rosenberg case. But the Fifth Circuit is even tougher than Bruner. In the Fifth Circuit, the Gerhardt case adopted the Bruner test. And the Fifth Circuit opined that in order to meet this second prong of Bruner, a debtor has to show a total incapacity in the future to pay his debts for reasons not within his control.